It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT on 100.1 FM. It's your public radio station. We're broadcasting up here on Signal Hill, snowy Signal Hill. Presently 33 degrees up here with a steady snow coming down. We're expected to snow all day and probably tonight too. Northeast wind to 15, gusting as high as 30 today. And your chance of precipitation is 90%. Maybe an inch will fall today. And maybe an inch overnight too. Mostly cloudy skies tonight with a low around 31. East wind gusting as high as 30 tonight. Coming up on the Midday Report, Soldotna's Indy Walton has resigned from the Board of Fisheries. Air travel delays continue to plague Alaskans who went down south. And snow on the roof can be bad.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Crews are still rescuing motorists who've been trapped for more than 20 hours in frigid temperatures on I-95 south of Washington, D.C. Andrew Stein was on his way back from South Carolina when he got caught in the winter storm and hit the traffic jam near Fredericksburg. As of this morning, he still hadn't made it home.
I think I've gone through the five stages of grief. I'm now at acceptance, but getting a little worried because I'm low on gas.
He wasn't alone. From Member Station VPM, Megan Pauley reports collisions began yesterday morning during the snowstorm, but Virginia officials didn't officially close the highway until 8 this morning.
Transportation officials say a domino effect of crashes, including jackknifed tractor trailers, contributed to the backup on Interstate 95. After sitting for hours last night, Claire Gustanyaga decided to take an exit. She found a hotel room, but says many others weren't so lucky.
There are people up here who spent the night in their cars lined up at gas stations because their gas stations were running out of gas and people wanted to be first in line this morning when they reopened.
State officials were unable to provide an estimate of how many people and cars were and still are stranded. For NPR News, I'm Megan Pauley in Richmond.
The Biden administration says it's doubling the number of Pfizer antiviral pills it's purchasing to 20 million treatment courses. President Biden calls the pills a game changer in the U.S. fight against the pandemic. The two-drug regimen is intended to be taken at home for 5 days right after the onset of COVID-19 symptoms. But deliveries of Paxlovid are not expected for months. Biden says people can still protect themselves, get vaccinated, and use the tools they've had for nearly 2 years.
These coming weeks are going to be challenging. Please wear your mask in public to protect yourself and others. We're going to get through this. We're going to get through it together. We have the tools to protect people from severe illness due to Omicron if people choose to use the tools.
Meanwhile, tensions are escalating in Florida over the rising number of COVID cases and how the government is responding. NPR's Greg Allen reports police handcuffed and removed an activist today who wanted to question the governor at a news conference.
Why am I being handcuffed?
Jacksonville community activist Ben Frazier says he was there to hold Governor Ron DeSantis accountable for his COVID policies. DeSantis has fought with local governments, school districts, and the Biden administration over vaccine and face mask mandates, which the governor says are overly intrusive and ineffective. At his news conference, he said President Biden's efforts to stop COVID have failed.
Now we are here almost a year in, and clearly they have not been able to, quote, shut down the virus.
Florida is setting new records for the number of daily cases, and people are waiting in line for hours at test sites. DeSantis says he thinks too many people without symptoms are being needlessly tested.
Greg Allen reporting. It's NPR.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
Governor Mike Dunleavy declared a disaster emergency yesterday for some areas in Alaska affected by severe winter storms. Dunleavy's declaration covers the Copper River and Delta Greeley areas, as well as the North Star Fairbanks, Denali, and Matanuska-Susitna boroughs. Extreme winds and cold temperatures have affected these areas. At one point over the weekend, 20,000 households in Matsu lost power. Dunleavy says now is the time to check in with neighbors and stay off the roads if possible. The declaration activates a program that provides assistance to individuals or families to meet disaster-related necessary expenses and serious needs. It's noontime on January 1st in Kodiak. Many people have gathered on Mill Bay Beach. It's 14 degrees outside, but the 30-mile-an-hour winds bring the wind chill down to minus 14. It's time for the polar plunge. 30 people sporting bright pink t-shirts jump into the dangerously cold water, and they're not doing it for fun. They're doing it for a cause.
It kind of evolved out of, I have a member that's a former Navy SEAL, and then a bunch of girls that are really crazy. And it kind of escalated from there.
That's Lindsey Knight, owner of the Kodiak Athletic Club. He and a posse of about 30 members of his gym took the plunge, doing it as a charity event for Kodiak Women's Resource and Crisis Center. Knight had t-shirts made for the group, and according to him, they've already collected a pot of over $500, with more coming in day by day. Ambika Srivastava gets much of the credit for organizing the event.
Lindsey and I, we were working out one morning, and I was telling him how I've done 12 polar plunges all last year with my friends just for fun. We did one each month, and then I started convincing him and another fellow gym member to do the polar plunge with me.
They started recruiting other gym members in early December, and their ranks swelled pretty quickly. In fact, while some people refused to join outright, according to Knight, most people he asked to take the plunge were willing to commit, which is remarkable considering the conditions.
It was pretty terrible. I think this is the roughest one I've done. I had started doing it last January. I had actually missed the original polar plunge, and so I decided to do it a few days later when I arrived into Kodiak a year ago. But this one had to be the most brutal one. I told everyone I was going to make it more Instagrammable and go all the way in and dunk my head. That did not happen. It was so cold, I could barely think of it as I hit the water, and I was like, okay, dunk and out.
Those interested in contributing to their fundraising effort can reach out to the Kodiak Athletic Club online. Soldotna's Indy Walton has resigned from his seat on the State Board of Fisheries, the 7-member board that makes decisions about fish allocations and management in Alaska's waters. Walton says he's dealing with a confluence of health issues that have been exacerbated by stress and a bout of COVID-19. While he thought he could balance those issues when he accepted Governor Mike Dunleavy's nomination in September, he says he's since had to reconsider.
I'd hoped when I accepted the position that things would be different and change as far as my schedule, and didn't realize some of the health issues that I was being faced with until after doing some tests. And I know now I've got to alleviate some of the stress and lighten my load a little bit, which isn't my style.
He says his workload is another factor. Walton is a financial advisor to the Soldotna branch of Edward Jones. Walton's resignation caps a 4-month tenure on the board. The Cordova Times first reported Dunleavy appointed Walton to the 7th open seat last fall after his previous nominee was rejected by the Alaska legislature. Walton lives in Soldotna and has roots in both the commercial and sport fishing sectors. He owns a sport fishing lodge in Igiagic and commercial fishes in Bristol Bay. He's also an outspoken critic of the controversial Pebble Mine project. In his time on the board, Walton attended one work session in Anchorage. He says he's frustrated he has to take a step back from the board now, and he might consider pursuing the position again if his situation changes down the road. In the meantime, he hopes whoever takes his place can bring experience from multiple sectors.
I would love to see somebody who has an open mind that can try to bring, you know, both sides of the commercial and sport side of fishing together to work out some of the impasses that are currently, you know, at bay.
Board of Fisheries Executive Director Glenn Haight says Dunleavy has 30 days to make a new appointment to the board. His office is now accepting applications for the 3-year position. Separately, the board's next meeting, scheduled for January in Ketchikan, has been postponed due to high COVID-19 case counts in Southeast Alaska. Air travel delays continue for many Alaskans who went out of state for Christmas and intended to be back by now. Alaska Airlines canceled almost 100 flights on Monday, according to FlightAware.com. Alaska Public Media's Liz Ruskin has been in touch with travelers stuck on vacation long after the fun is gone.
Susan Hainer of Anchorage is grounded in Las Vegas with three children under 10.
You know, we're fine. We're just frustrated. We want to get home. Kids need to be in school. We need to be at work.
On their outbound leg, they got stuck in Seattle for 2 days, but they made it to Nevada in time for her daughter's hockey tournament. Then their return flight was canceled. Now, what was supposed to be a one-week trip is stretching to almost two.
We just extended our stay in the hotel we were staying at before. You know, it's a Marriott, so it's decent, but things are starting to add up, you know, unexpected costs.
I'm getting this. Look at what I'm getting. I'm getting one of these.
Hainer and her family are at Target, where they went for necessary supplies like nail clippers and emergency toys. Each child was allotted a $10 budget. Hainer says they considered taking the long way home, flying to other airports to see if they had flights to Anchorage. They even considered going via Hawaii.
Yeah, we were going to drive from Las Vegas to Los Angeles to be on that direct flight. There's nothing available until January, I think, 11th. We're going to drive to Denver. There's nothing out of Denver directly to Anchorage. You have to connect in Seattle. I mean, we were going to drive to Phoenix, but my friends are stuck in Phoenix right now until January 10th. There's absolutely nothing.
So now they're resigned to racking up bills with the hotel stay and the rental car. Meanwhile, back home, their Aussie doodle misses them, and they owe their dog sitter more with each passing day. They've heard the airline might reimburse them for some of it, but they don't know how much. Alaska Airlines, like its competitors, cites a combination of weather delays and a high number of employees sidelined by COVID. Scott McMurrin, who writes the Alaska Travelgram newsletter, says he thinks the primary cause was weather.
My sense is that COVID is a contributing factor. But there was so much bad weather, particularly in Seattle.
But to Hainer, it feels like this is one more thing lost to the pandemic, the trust she used to have in the reliability of air travel.
We can't take anything for granted anymore, like having a set schedule or arriving at our destination or going home.
The only thing Hainer feels she can rely on now is uncertainty. For Alaska Public Media, I'm Liz Ruskin.
One of the forgotten dangers of living in Alaska is a roof full of snow. Though it can make a cozy cabin photo, the chance of roof collapse or being caught in an avalanche of roof snow is real, and it's something we can prepare for. KHNS's Mike Swayze has this report.
Haines is reporting nearly 4 feet of snow at multiple locations, and with high winds expected throughout the week, drifting snow can cause greater depths. Eric Stevens from the Haines Avalanche Center says addressing your snowy roof while it's cold can prevent problems later on when it warms up.
I definitely recommend people be cautious, but it's also a good idea to get that snow off your roof if it's piling up and it's not shedding naturally. I'd hate for the next storm to come in real heavy and wet. It could double the load pretty easily.
Stevens says the Haines Avalanche Center measured the ground snow load over the weekend and found the snow weighs 57 pounds per square foot.
So I've heard of yurts collapsing pretty frequently here in Haines. I've seen garages and boat sheds collapse pretty frequently. I don't think I've heard so much about residential homes collapsing, but every now and then there's a flat-roofed business that might collapse. So it does happen.
In Skagway, fire department officials warn that heat from inside the house can cause the snow closest to the roof to melt, which can later freeze. That can be a problem for firefighters when there's a chimney fire. Firefighter engineer Zach Overmeyer says they don't wear cleats on their boots to get a good grip on icy roofs because that's dangerous when climbing ladders.
We don't have a ladder truck or a platform vehicle that we can put a ladder up to have a surface for us to be on. We actually have to put a portable ladder up against the house and then another ladder that that hangs on the peak of the roof to give us a stable platform to work off of. And if there's a bunch of snow up there, we're not able to get that ladder. So we'd have to spend the extra time to shovel those roofs off.
Overmeyer says the time spent shoveling snow instead of fighting the fire can lead to more damage, and heavy snow loads can cause collapses.
If the house itself does get involved in fire, having that extra load on the roof and extra weight will make those trusses and ceilings and stuff fail a lot quicker, which can potentially harm us as firefighters, getting us trapped inside.
Fire department records show that typically 2 to 3 chimneys catch fire each year in Skagway. Another potential danger from excessive snow on roofs is a roof snow avalanche. Last January, a Haines man was buried while collecting firewood out by Mosquito Lake. As Chilkat Valley News reported, a former heli-ski guide was grabbing a couple of logs for his wood stove at night when the roof snow gave way and buried him. He managed to access his cell phone while pinned by the snow, and he alerted neighbors, who helped rescue him after about 45 minutes. He was lucky. Stephen says shoveling a roof can cause a slide. Slides can also happen anytime the roof has a steep pitch.
You know, metal roofs are particularly slick underneath, and they tend to slide when it warms up. When it's cold, they're not likely to slide, but they could. The other thing that increases the danger significantly of a roof avalanche would be the steepness of the roof. If your roof is around 30 degrees or steeper, I do not recommend getting on top of it or under it at all, because it could shed really at any time.
Stephen says snow drifts piling up on one section of the roof can also create problems. He suggests having a structural engineer inspect your roof if you're unsure if it can handle the winter's snow load. In addition to the nearly 4 feet of snow in Haines, Dyee is reporting 2 feet, the William Moore Bridge on the Klondike Highway is reporting 3 feet, and in town, Skagway is reporting 16 inches. Skagway officials suggest hiring a local contractor to help with snow removal if necessary. Reporting from Skagway, I'm Mike Swayze.
Strong winds are sweeping across Bristol Bay in the first days of the new year, knocking out power across the region and ushering in frigid temperatures. Wind gusts above 60 miles per hour have been recorded in communities around the region.
Snow billowed across Alaknagik Lake, creating deep drifts in some places and exposing bare ice in others. Catherine Andrew lives on Hayek Island, and she didn't leave her house for 2 days after the wind picked up over the weekend. She says she could hear spruce trees falling on Sunday night.
This morning when I woke up and I looked out on the lake, I could tell that some people's belongings had blown into either the lake or onto the ice.
That included her father's sled.
I asked my dad, is that your sled way out there in the middle? He said that was his and he was going to get it. Yeah, my tarp's probably gone.
About 30 miles away, the community of Clark's Point had peak winds of up to 67 miles per hour on Sunday night. Fire Chief Steve Aiken says internet and landlines from the regional utility, Nishigat Cooperative, have been out since Sunday.
We're just experiencing extremely high winds, and we still have power and we still have our water plant working.
Alaska Energy Authority usually provides remote technical support to the community's power plant, but it can't without internet. And with winds this strong, as of Monday afternoon, people haven't been able to fly in to help fix the problems.
A GCI crew tried to come down here and do stuff. They're the subcontractors for GCI, and I don't think they'll make it.
University of Alaska Fairbanks climate specialist Rick Toman says the winds are the result of the difference between very strong high pressure along the North Slope and low pressure in the Gulf of Alaska, combined with the cold temperatures of the interior.
That cold air, as it moves south, actually gets accelerated as it bumps up against the Wood River Mountains and is moving south, and that actually causes the air to pick up speed. And that's why winds have been so strong over the last couple of days in the region.
The National Weather Service reported peak winds of 66 miles per hour in Dillingham. That wind knocked the power out across the area Saturday evening, and some residents didn't have reliable power until Monday morning. The winds are expected to decrease after Monday, but while it's not as cold as it was in November, continuing winds will still keep temperatures down throughout the week. In Dillingham, I'm Izzy Ross.
The Matanuska-Susitna borough was also hammered by heavy winds since Saturday, leading to widespread damage and power outages for thousands of residents who described the worst winds they can remember, combined with bitterly cold temperatures. Alaska Public Media's Lex Trinan has this report.
Even without leaving her house, Elise Goodfellow described the winds of the last few days as horrific.
It literally sounds like we're in a tornado and like flying through an asteroid belt. We're just waiting for the debris to hit.
She lives in a farmhouse between Palmer and Wasilla with glass doors and large windows that were flexing with each gust. Her neighbor's camper tipped over and blew apart, crushing a nearby fence. Goodfellow had her husband go out and check on it.
There's just bits of chunks of metal and pieces of camper just blowing all over the neighborhood. She messaged us and said, you know, huh, if you could watch out for flying metal scraps, that'd be great.
Goodfellow hasn't had any serious property damage, but winds of more than 70 miles per hour were still gusting as late as Monday morning. For Goodfellow and many other residents of the Matsu, they're the worst winds they can remember. They've torn off roofs from houses, flipped trucks and planes, and knocked down spruce trees, crushing vehicles. The Matanuska Electric Association says nearly a quarter of its customers are without power as of Monday evening. The strongest gusts were recorded on the Glen Highway near the Palmer Interchange, where a gust of 91 miles per hour was notched on Sunday evening. Sarah Larimer runs Country Cannabis, a two-story barn that's perched right next to the roundabout on the top of the intersection.
We've seen three semi-trucks flip. We've seen a full-size six-place trailer, enclosed trailer flip on the roundabout. Right now there's a semi-truck on the bridge.
Debris smashed the window of one of her employees' vehicles, filling it with a heavy snowdrift before workers realized what had happened. The company's steel dumpster blew over and tumbled down the road. Larimer later found it in a ditch. Gusts were dying down by Monday afternoon, but there were new dangers.
Now that the snow is off the roads and stuff, now it's picking up gravel and kind of curing it in this like wind tunnel. You know, there's been some little mini like twisters that the wind kind of picks up and it'll kind of look like a mini tornado. And you can see debris and rocks and stuff flying in the air.
The full extent of the damage is still being pieced together, but businesses in the commercial area on the Glen Highway on Lake Wasilla were hit hard. Real estate agent Mark Babbitt surveyed some of the wreckage while checking on his properties. He stopped at a KFC that was badly damaged.
The sides are totally ripped off. You can just walk in and out of it. There's no way to board it up currently. The Palmer train station, which is the community center there, their pergola, which covers over the steam engine, has ripped down and fallen apart.
Wind chills are predicted to get as low as minus 35 degrees over the next few days. Schools were canceled on Monday and Tuesday, and the closure could be extended, says Superintendent Randy Traney.
The main reason for that is our parking lots. They just are not safe for students. And then we can't have kids waiting at bus stops. Not to mention we have so many families and staff who are dealing with broken pipes, no electricity.
Officials and the Red Cross set up two emergency shelters for residents, some of whom have gone without power for over 2 days. Matanuska Electric Association says it could take till the end of the week before all customers have power back up, so officials expect more people could start checking into the shelter soon. Still, Borough Manager Mike Brown says the area is lucky in one way.
We heard of one restaurant where some glass shattered and there was a minor injury to an individual. So we have seen spot reports, but we've been very fortunate not to have any significant injuries and or loss of life at this point.
But he cautioned the storm's still not over. A high wind warning is in effect until Wednesday evening, and the National Weather Service says temperatures could drop below zero. Reporting from Anchorage, I'm Lex Trinan.
Insight Daily Radio. Conversations with today's most influential authors, actors, musicians, artists, and creative minds. Over 10 million people have bought the book, What Color is Your Parachute? And this manual for job hunters has been extensively rewritten each year for over 40 years. The author of What Color is Your Parachute is Dick Bowles.
If people are not accustomed to being interviewed for a job, they always want to know what is the most important or what are the most important things that they should keep in mind when they go into the interview room. The first one is you have to let the conversation be 50-50. 50% of the time, you have to let them do the talking. 50% of the time, you should do the talking. You should have curiosities that you want to find out more about this organization and so on. A researcher at MIT years and years ago, his name and date of the research is lost in the mists of time, but he had this theory. So he asked all these recruiters, look back at all the people you interviewed during the day, look at the ones you hired, and look at the ones you did not hire. And instinctively, the recruiters always hired the person that allowed the 50% equation to dominate, and the ones that didn't get hired were either the people that talked all the time, the job hunters who talked all the time about themselves, because then they were presumed to be so self-absorbed they would be of no use to the organization, or the people that the interviewer talk all the time and said barely anything about themselves because they were assumed to have something to hide that they were anxious not to get into any discussion of.
Dick Bowles, author of the bestseller, What Color Is Your Parachute? There's more online, insightdailyradio.org.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon, and welcome to your Tuesday version of the Island Messenger. It is the fourth day of January, the year 2022. The sun rose today at 9:51. It will set again at 4:37. That will give us 6 hours and 46 minutes of glorious daylight, a gain of 2 minutes and 2 seconds compared to yesterday. A record low for this date was 2 degrees, set in 1975, and a record high was 46, set in 2005. We are closer to that, with 30 degrees out at the airport right now, 33 here at the station up on Signal Hill. They have north winds to 12 right now at the airport. The Weather Service is calling for snow for the rest of the day, and northeast winds gusting to 30. Maybe an inch of snow today. Snow is likely tonight as well. Cloudy skies, low around 31 tonight. Winds turning to the east and gusting to 30. We have an incoming tide. Our next high tide here on the east side will happen at 2:37 this afternoon. That will be a 10.9-foot tide, followed by a low tide at 9:29 p.m. That will be a -2-foot tide. Our next high tide here on the east side will be at 4:05 a.m. and be 8.2 feet, followed by a low tide tomorrow morning at 9:20 a.m. of 2.3 feet. Over on the west side, you have a high tide coming up at 3:09 this afternoon. That will be a 16.5-foot tide in Larsen Bay, followed by a low tide at 10 p.m. That will be a -3 1/3-foot tide. Your next high tide will be at 4:23 a.m. and be 13.8 feet. And your low tide tomorrow morning for Larsen Bay will be at 10:08 a.m. and be 3.2 feet. Mariners, be aware, we have a gale warning for tonight and Wednesday for Marmot Island to Sitkin at Kodiak's east side offshore. East wind 30 knots today and seas to 11 feet with freezing spray near the island. For tonight, east 35 and seas to 11 feet. And for tomorrow, east 35, seas to 15 feet. Over in the Shelikof, gale warning through Wednesday. Northeast 35 today with seas to 12 feet and freezing spray. For tomorrow, northeast 35, seas to 10 feet.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 3 times a day. Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the midday report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.